Good afternoon. This is the Chorus Call conference operator. Welcome, and thank you for joining the CIR Full Year 2020 Results Conference Call. As a reminder, all participants are in listen-only mode. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. Should anyone need assistance during the conference call, they may signal an operator by pressing star and zero on their telephone. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Rodolfo De Benedetti, Chairman of CIR. Please go ahead, sir.
Good afternoon. I would like to briefly, as usual, go through the key numbers that were approved by CIR's board this morning regarding our 2020 results. And I would start at page four of the presentation to comment what we think are the main highlights of the year. So, as you know, the merger between COFIL and CIR was effective in the early part of last year. Disposal of our interest in GEDI was announced at the end of the previous year, but the closing happened in the first half of 2020, as well as the reinvestment of 5% of the new entity. COS went through an important divestiture. It's a diagnostic business, Medipass, which was sold in the course of the year, in the second half of the year. And we had a couple of small divestitures of plants, one in Brazil and one in Spain, within Sogefi. In the course of the year, Sogefi refinanced a significant part of its existing debt through SACE and PGE-supported financings for about 120 million euros, and COS started a similar exercise in the second part of the year, which has not been completed yet, but it's at a fairly advanced stage of completion. In terms of P&L, our sales were down 8.3% last year. Obviously, given the nature of the holding company, this aggregates the two different businesses, and within the different businesses, there has been some change in perimeter. So in the case of COS, if we exclude the Charleston acquisition, which impacted full year 2020 for the first time, sales would have been down by a little bit more than 10%. And in the case of Sogefi, there hasn't been any change in perimeter, and sales were down almost 18%, thanks to a good second part of the year, particularly good last quarter of the year. The early part of the year, particularly Q2, was very, very severely impacted by COVID. The net result of the holding company amounts to 16.3 million profit, which is composed of a loss of almost 16 million from ongoing activity. So this is the share part of both COS and Sogefi's result, excluding extraordinaries. And this clearly has been severely impacted by the pandemic. And then we had 32 million positive of contribution from discounted activities, and the main component here is the gain on the disposal of Medipass within COS, but there are a few other elements too. Net financial position on a consolidated basis, net debt of 100 million. An increase of 227 million compared to the end of 19. And this is mainly due to the disposals that I mentioned and that I'll go through later. In terms of the outlook that we see, challenging one for COS. COS was severely affected last year overall, but more so in the Nursing Home Italy business. The Nursing Home Italy business has not yet rebounded, and we will see later the numbers that our occupancy levels are down sharply. We anticipate that the pickup will happen that relatively slowly. It has been faster on the Rehab Italy business, where there's been a sharp fall in Q2, but Q3, Q4, we saw a pretty rapid recovery there to levels not far from 2019. Nursing Home Germany performed much better than Nursing Home Italy in terms of occupancy rates. We had a drop, but much less severe. We are close to where we were expected to be when we made the acquisition. Sogefi was very severely impacted in Q2. Had good recovery Q3 and particularly Q4. Frankly, it's relatively difficult today, given the uncertainties about the reopening of the economies, to have a good visibility about the next few quarters. We expect a recovery overall in 2021 compared to 2020. We will be probably lower than we were in 2019 in terms of volumes. I will very briefly comment page six, which are the consolidated number, because I think it makes more sense to go through the two businesses, but this is the aggregation that we had to do for accounting purposes. As you see, sales were down 8%. On the right-hand side of page six, you have the breakdown where you have the costs like for like. You have the inclusion of Charleston, which was bought in the last part of 2019. 2020 was the first full year of consolidation of the business. That clearly contributed to an increase in the overall cost sales. You have the minus 18% of Sogefi, as we saw earlier. I don't know how much it makes sense to comment about EBITDA and EBIT at a consolidated level. Maybe just to say that we had a good year as CIR holding company for our financial investments. They performed overall well during the year, particularly the equity component of the portfolio as well as the hedge fund component. We had a reasonably good year on the fixed income portfolio, which is, as you know, is very conservatively managed. We had a couple of write-downs that were not realized losses, but those are marks that we put on our direct investments. We think some of those are temporary, but we'll see. In terms of accounting, we mark to market with the latest available numbers and comparables all of our investments. On page seven, you have on the lower parts of the P&L, you have a few details. Particularly, you can see the impact of the Medipass divestiture. Cost contributes a net negative result, excluding Medipass, which becomes positive when you include Medipass, but this clearly is a one-off. Sogefi also had some negative contributions from the divestitures that I mentioned earlier that I'll comment further later. On page eight, you have the balance sheet picture. You have here the net financial position on a consolidated basis, the 100 million that I mentioned earlier, with the split between costs, Sogefi, and the holding company. The holding company increases by about 100 million, which is mainly due to the JV divestiture and subsequent reinvestment of the 5%. and obviously the financial result of the portfolio, which increases the net financial position. Cost Group is a significantly lower debt because of the impact of the Medipass disposal. And so Sogefi has managed actually to contain what could have been a much worse impact in terms of cash flow. And you know, when we saw Q2, we were very worried about the fact that the company could have required a significant cash burn. You know, the good second part of the year and the actions that were taken contain the damage, and most of the damage is really related to working capital, because when you decrease sales, clearly that has short-term a negative impact on working capital, which hopefully will rebalance once sales stabilize. And you have both the on the top end left side, excluding IFRS 16 and including that impact, and the inclusion of IFRS 16 is particularly meaningful for cost given the nature of the business, because a big chunk of the real estate that we use is rented long term, and that clearly becomes a debt position in the new accounting rule. I think I don't have much else to comment. On page 9, you have some details about our non-core investments. As you know, we carry a portfolio of private equity investments, mainly fund investments, but also co-investments, and the other investments are co-investments, and this is where you have the fair value adjustment of 4.3 million that I mentioned earlier, and then you have the bridge between end of 19 and end of 20 with the impact of the JD divestiture, which is the bulk of the change. If I go now to page 11, I'll briefly comment costs. You know about the German acquisition, which contributed to geographic diversification of the business in the nursing home space. We acquired about 4,000 beds in Germany. We acquired a business which was barely profitable when we acquired it, because it was putting together in a build-up and still has efficiencies to be realized on that perimeter, which we are doing. We are happy about the acquisition. COVID has had a negative impact, but much less so than in Italy. And the German system is one where the government protects those kind of businesses in a much more effective and visible and transparent way than what has happened in Italy. So part of the shortfall, which was due to COVID, has been compensated by government subsidies on that business. I think clearly the business that has suffered the most from COVID has been the nursing home Italy business, and this mainly because of a combination of lower occupancy rates, and as in any fixed cost business, and this is one of those, if you lower your occupancy rate, you lower your revenues, you don't really lower your costs, which are in a big part fixed costs. So we had both lower revenues and higher costs, and higher costs because the protection measures that we had to put in place were clearly costly, and we had a small compensation during the year 2020 from government subsidies, but it's something which is managed at a regional level, and it's not centralized. There are no rules, and every region more or less do whatever they they think they want to do. And so it was was not easy to forecast. It is still not easy to forecast for this year, and it's very diverse as a situation region to region. The business that has been more resilient has been the rehab and psychiatric care business. Some impact there too, because with the closure of hospitals, this has impacted volumes in the first part of the year. But given the essential nature of those services, as soon as the economy opened up a bit at the end of Q2, those activities started pretty rapidly, and you have actually a catch-up effect because some of what has not been done needs to be done, and so people tend to use more those type of services. I mentioned the divestiture of Medipass. This is a process that started at the end of 19, so pre-COVID. We had COVID happening in the middle of the process, which clearly wasn't the ideal situation to be in. But fortunately, given the nature of the business, which has been relatively COVID-proof, I mean, some impact there too, but less so than in other businesses, and to, I think, the quality of the asset and the strategic value of this asset in the consolidation of that space in Europe has enabled us to run a process that resulted in two binding bids for the business, and one of them, which was the most attractive one for us as a seller, we retained, and we ended up closing that transaction in the last part of the year on terms that were, I could say, probably not affected by COVID. So in terms of where we started and in terms of the business plans that the buyer has underwritten, it's as if COVID hasn't happened, and the buyer has accepted to consider that this was a temporary hit that would not become permanent on the life of the plan, which was not obvious because we didn't have 20 buyers, we had two buyers, and so we were able, I think, to complete successfully the divestiture. The reason why we did it was that, it had nothing to do with COVID because it started earlier, but we thought that strategically it makes more sense for COS to really focus on its core business, which is the long-term care part of the business, and that this was not really, part of the core business. And we thought that it would make more sense to redeploy our capital into our core business, where we have economies of scale and where size matters. On page 12, you have the P&L of COS, where I already commented about the increase in revenues, which was exclusively due to the change in perimeter. I think EBITDA and EBITDA has relative meanings here because if you buy businesses like the German business, which has a lot of depreciation related, particularly to not owning the real estate, that is not comparable. I think the relevant number is more the EBIT number, and here you see the severe impact of the lower volumes, particularly in Italy, and then you have the positive contribution of 60 million, which is obviously non-recurring, which is related to the divestiture of Medipass. Again, on the outlook here, we are, I would say, more positive on rehab and Germany. We are more concerned about the pace of the recovery of nursing home Italy. It's taking time, and I think it will take time. Obviously, vaccination is a game changer for solving the problem, but vaccination pace in Italy in particular has been so far pretty slow. And ultimately vaccination is not compulsory, and so we are also dependent upon the willingness of people, both patients as well as staff, to be vaccinated. I think compared to other countries and probably compared to other situations even within Italy, the level of percentage of vaccination is good, but it's not 100%. On page 13, you have a detail about particularly the occupancy numbers, which, as you know, are key in this business. And as you can see, nursing home occupancy was significantly down. We've never seen such a drop in the 20 years we've been operating in this business. We have a bit less in terms of drop. In Germany, we don't really have a comparable number for 19, but it's a few points lower than what we expected. But at least so far, certainly a better situation than Italy. And as a reminder, we retained the Medipass India business because this was part of the offer that we received on Medipass. The buyer was not interested in the Indian business, so we retain it with clearly the objective, once the business stabilized post-COVID, to sell this business. On page 14, you have a breakdown of revenues by quarter, as well as by type of business, by division. I already commented on this. I don't think there's much that I can add, but you might have questions there. On page 15, you have the results broken down by type of business, where you can see the Medipass business and how it contributed to revenues and to profits. If you deduct that Medipass business, you have the long-term acute care Italy, which is the like-for-like, if you wish, perimeter to compare 2020 to 2020 and 19. And so there you can see a significant impact in terms of profitability. EBIT was pretty good. It was like 12% of sales in 19 and went down to less than 4%. So as you can see, the impact is meaningful. And you have for both 19 and 20 the contributions of both the German business as well as the Indian business. And then on the last column on the right, you have the consolidated reported numbers, which we have seen earlier. As you can see, this was a fairly profitable business, which in a year, just because of the combination of lower revenues and higher costs, turned into a loss. Going to Sogefi on page 16, you have a simplified P&L on the left-hand side. Net result went from a positive 3.2 million to a negative 31 million in the year. Obviously, we're not happy about that result, but frankly, we think it could have been much worse. And we think the company actually has reacted quite decisively to the downturn. We have lowered our fixed cost basis by about 20% during the year, which is frankly an achievement. It's not easy in a short period of time to do that, and that has enabled us to cushion the fall in volumes. And as you can see, EBIT was still positive. We had some non-recurring costs related to the cost reduction plan, as well as to the divestiture of those two plants, Brazil and Spain, that I mentioned, that had a negative contribution. We made a loss selling those assets. We think that, you know, given the fact that they would have been loss-making going forward, we think that's a, you know, it's a good transaction for the company to simplify our corporate structure and get rid of operations that frankly don't have a lot of future, at least within our perimeter. On page 17, you have the quarter-by-quarter evolution of sales on the left hand side. On the top, you have the consolidated numbers, and then you have the breakdown by geographical regions, where, as you can see, you know, Q2 was a major disaster pretty much everywhere, but particularly in Europe and particularly in Mercosur. That has, you know, rebounded somewhat in the second part of the year. The U.S. was more resilient and actually, you know, in the second part of the year, did relatively well compared to 2019. China was affected more in Q1 than in the rest of the year. You know, we have a small business in China. We are getting new orders, you know, new platforms, and so we're able, despite the, you know, the need to grow, as you can see, significantly more than the market, and to have a less of a hit in Q1. Mercosur is a difficult area. You might have seen that some of our clients have withdrawn from that market. It has performed badly for the last few years, and, you know, COVID was really a major casualty there. Lastly, on page 18, you have a breakdown of the three businesses where you have a very different performance. I would say that, you know, air and cooling, which is our best performing unit, performed, you know, very well given the environment in 2020. Thanks to, you know, good growth in China and good growth with some clients which have compensated the decline in the market. You know, EBITDA margin as a percentage of sales increased over the previous year, which was frankly pretty remarkable. The filtration business has had some impact, but the impact was cushioned by the aftermarket activities, which were less affected by the shutdown of car production in the first part of the year. There is a new management here, so the air and cooling management took over filtration about 18 months ago. Since then, performance has improved. The real, you know, the real challenge has been and has been for a couple of years now on the suspension business. Volumes were much more severely affected there. This business is much more present in Europe as opposed to NAFTA and China. It clearly suffered more because Europe suffered more. It doesn't have an aftermarket component, and so it was more exposed to, you know, to what happened macro-wise, which is pretty much outside of management control. I would pause here and maybe leave some time for your questions.
Excuse me. This is the Chorus Call conference operator. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who has a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. To remove yourself from the question queue, please press star and two. Please pick up the receiver when asking questions. Anyone who has a question may press star and one at this time. The first question is from Martino De Ambroggi with Equita. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. Three questions, starting questions on costs. The first, you mentioned vaccines are progressing. Could you provide an update on what is a rough percentage of the people receiving vaccines today, and both hosts and staff first. The second question is on the government reimbursement in Italy. We know other countries were much quicker than Italy. Do you see any significant support going forward from Italian regions? And third is the occupancy rate. You mentioned Italy will take quite a long time before coming back to the previous levels, but and you mentioned Q1 is just stabilizing, so you do not see a recovery in the occupancy in nursing homes in Italy yet. So if you could elaborate on this trend. Thank you.
Okay, so three questions. The percentage of vaccinations, what I can tell you is the percentage of vaccination of our patients, which is about 75%, which is probably going to stay there. I mean, it's, I would say that vaccination is by and large done for that category of people in Italy, and so we don't expect that to significantly grow anymore. You have also to consider the fact that not everybody is eligible for vaccination. So there are those that don't want to be vaccinated, but there are those that cannot be vaccinated because of you know, particular diseases or health problems, and so that clearly is you know, is a limit. We cannot really provide numbers for personnel because we are not actually allowed to know for privacy reasons. We are obviously you know, making a lot of efforts to convince people and to make them aware of the fact that it is important for the company and for their job and for the safety of their colleagues and the patients that they are vaccinated, but we cannot compel them to do it. So we can encourage them, and we do it. You know, at the end of the day, it's up to them. So there, you know, the number today is a number that can grow because, you know, there are people that have chosen not to be vaccinated, and hopefully part of those will be convinced to be vaccinated. In terms of the...
Sorry, if I may, 75 is for the whole company, Germany plus Italy, or just Italy?
Yes, for the whole company.
Okay.
In terms of public support, in Italy, we received about 7.5 million euro during the year 2020 from the regions. And as I said, you know, this is not managed at a central level, but more at a regional level. And so the situation is very differentiated between regions. I think the same will be the case for, you know, going forward and for this year. And so it's very diverse. In Germany, you know, they stated clearly at the outset of the pandemic that they would compensate nursing homes for the loss of revenues and the loss of occupancy. And the formula was quite clear. You know, it was based on the previous year, and it was based on capacity. And so, you know, it was clear and it was transparent, and they did what they said that they would do. So, you know, very different situation in the two countries. In terms of occupancy, I would say that we had probably two stages. We had a first drop, which was severe, which happened with the first lockdown starting in March. And then we had some sort of stabilization, I would say, from June to September. And then we had a second drop at the end of the year, which coincided with the new restrictions that were put in place in Italy. And since then, we haven't really rebounded. What it looks like when you look at the numbers is that probably, it looks like situations have a bit stabilized, probably in the course of the last couple of months. But it's very difficult to judge this on a month by month basis because there might be some other factors. Our hope is that we have touched the bottom and that from here we should recover, but we don't expect the recovery to be a rapid one.
Okay. On the government reimbursement, 7.5 in 2020, do you expect any additional contribution in 2021?
Michele, do you want to answer that?
It's possible, but we don't usually account for any revenues until we have a regulation approved by the individual regions. And currently, what we have disclosed before is all that is currently available for sure. As Adolfo said, there is a state country level regulation which allows the region to compensate for lost revenues, but it doesn't set an obligation to do that, which means that every region will decide the wrong way what they want to do, and that's what happened so far. That's what will probably happen in the future. So for the time being, that's what we got. We don't have any certainty about what could be next. That's for Italy. In Germany, the government support will be there for the whole of Q1, and then they will announce whether it will be extended further.
Okay, if I may, two more questions on costs. One, referring to the sale of properties, can we consider what you did last year as a one-off event or could be replicated, so seeing additional property divestiture? Two, could you update the picture on the number of beds under development? And if I may, third, you last year bought two greenfields and at the end of the year. Is there any other significant opportunity in a very difficult market environment, maybe some smaller player which is deciding to leave the floor?
With regards to real estate sale, we normally do that on a regular basis with the greenfields. So we normally build them, and then once they are operational, we sell them to real estate funds. So that, since we probably build a couple of greenfields in Italy per year and another couple of greenfields in Germany, that's probably going to be recurring sale event. Then we have the rest of real estate, which we can either sell to free up some cash, or we can finance with the real estate mortgages, which is an opportunistic choice depending on the availability of capital and the opportunities available. So greenfields, you have on page 11 an indication of the current pipeline, which currently stands at 950 beds, including Italy and Germany. And as I said before, the expected pace of implementation would be a couple of greenfields in Italy and a couple of greenfields in Germany, which means 200 plus 200 beds per year. Acquisitions, I mean, this is something that is quite unpredictable. So we will for sure be ready to profit for available opportunities, but we cannot count on that. I mean, in crisis times, it can happen that M&A kind of freezes because companies are not performing, especially in nursing homes. So the sellers don't want to sell at a low price unless they are forced. So it's not. We've seen it in previous downturns of the economy. It's not straightforward that those mean an increase in M&A activity.
Okay, thank you.
The next question is from Daniele Ridolfi with Kepler Cheuvreux. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon to everybody, and thanks for taking my question. Some of my questions were already asked by my colleague, but I have an additional question on costs, if I may. In terms of M&A, I was wondering if you have already identified some potential M&A target in the healthcare sector, or if we have to consider your M&A strategy in standby for a while due to the prosecution of the COVID-19 emergency. And on this point, I was wondering if you are in talks with F2I for the potential acquisition of the whole or part of F2I stake because the lockup period should expire in 2021, if I remember correctly. If you can elaborate a little bit more on this point, please.
Yeah, maybe I can answer the second question, and Michele can do the first one. On F2I, you know, F2I, as you well know, is a fund, and as every fund, they have a limited life of their investments, and so, you know, by definition, they will be a seller at some point in time. From what we understand and what they are telling us, they're not there yet, so they don't foresee in the foreseeable future a divestiture of their interest in COS. We are not holding conversations with them in that sense. And I would presume that, you know, given what happened last year and given the impact that this has had on the results of the company, they're probably not in a hurry to, you know, to think about divesting their cost stake. So it is not something that is on the table now or in the foreseeable future. You want to talk about M&A targets?
M&A targets, as I said before, we don't have any immediate meaningful target, so we'll be opportunistic. We'll of course, look at anything that is available, and then depending on the size, then we'll have to decide how to finance it, taking into account the current performance in terms of financial equilibrium of the company. So we have, of course, available ways to free up capital, including real estate and other possibilities. Having said that, the primary focus of the company today is, of course, working on the operational performance first, then delivering on the pipeline of greenfields, and then we'll be opportunistic about acquisitions to the extent that there is an interesting opportunity, will be there to look at it, of course.
Okay, thank you.
As a reminder, if you wish to register for a question, please press star and one on your telephone. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and one on your telephone. The next question is a follow-up from Martino De Ambroggi with Equita. Please go ahead.
Yeah, and changing the subject on Sogefi, could the change of the CEO mean a change in the strategy first? And second, should we expect any further small or medium sized rationalization of the perimeter like Sogefi did last year?
I would say that on the first question, the answer is no in itself, in the sense that the change happened because the previous CEO decided for personal reasons to leave the company, and we thought that it was a good opportunity to promote somebody from within that has delivered in an outstanding way in the company, has been with us for the last 9 years, has been responsible since 2015 of the air and cooling division, which over the years has been our best performing unit, and to the point that a year ago or 18 months ago we asked him also to take the management responsibility of the filtration part. So it's not somebody that comes from the outside and that we don't know. It's somebody that has deep roots and a history with the company. So we don't foresee in itself, a change in strategy. We have said in the past that, our priority for Sogefi was to work on making it a more efficient and profitable and cash flow generating company. We think that is highly doable. Obviously, COVID was not foreseen and, has set us back for at least a few quarters compared to what we would have done without it. But we continue to be pretty confident that that plan is fully achievable, and we think that the quality and the operating expertise of the new CEO are the right type of profile for what we need to achieve in this business. In terms of perimeter, the two divestitures that were carried out were because those were plants that were not fully occupied in terms of volumes. We, as you know, we have a significant investment in a new plant in Eastern Europe. We made a big investment for a new plant in Morocco a couple of years ago. So basically, we are rationalizing our industrial footprint, reducing costs in high labor country, and shifting some of that production into lower cost of labor countries to be more efficient and to gain contracts and market share with OEMs that award us business to the extent that we can be competitive. And so that is really the process the company is going through. A lot has been done, but it's not finished, and we still have work to do. So I think we will continue to work in that direction in the next few years. Then obviously, the market is moving, and we operate in three different businesses, and there are competitors, some of them doing well, some of them doing less well. There are pressures from sometimes from customers to concentrate. And so I think we live in a dynamic environment in this business, and You know, my guess is that over the next few years there will be M&A opportunities, there will be combination opportunities to strengthen our presence in our three divisions. And as we always said, you know, we will look at portfolio management within Sogefi with a view of strengthening our strategic positioning, because that ultimately is what drives profitability in this business, and you see that through the different performance of the different divisions. And so this is what we would like to do from a portfolio management standpoint. But there is nothing concrete, there is nothing imminent that we're working on right now.
Thank you. If I may go in at the upper stage, so on CIR, could you restart the buyback now that you do not have any more limitations, or this is not on the table?
Yeah, this is on the table. We actually, the board this morning decided to propose to our next shareholders meeting to reinstate a buyback plan. And so we will ask the shareholder meetings to grant the board the right to effect buybacks within the limits of the law. And so we plan to do that.
Okay, so you want to act in the direction. Okay. And the very last on the use of cash. So you do not distribute any dividend. So you are thinking in investing your cash in a new business. First question, and maybe a follow-up later.
No, we're not thinking about investing in a new business. We are thinking about, you know, investing in our own shares, as I just said, with buybacks, and in, you know, supporting opportunistically our operating companies should we see opportunities to accelerate their growth.
And this was exactly my follow-up. So would you be willing to inject money in cost in case of a big acquisitions, a big opportunity coming out? Obviously, you probably have to discuss it with your partner, but would you be willing to?
I think that, you know, on paper, absolutely yes. So, you know, the mandate we have always given to our management teams has been, you know, we like the business we're in, and we would like to grow those businesses, and we can grow them internally, organically, or we can grow them inorganically. And COS has a track record of, you know, both organic and inorganic growth, and we would like to continue that. And so we are open to, to exploring acquisition opportunities within COS. Up to now, in the last few years, COS has generated sufficient free cash flow to fund both greenfield and inorganic growth, including the acquisition in Germany 18 months ago. But, you know, one could very well imagine targets that would go beyond what COS could finance with its own balance sheet. And we actually would welcome that opportunity if we were to find the right opportunity at the right price. And in that case, we have said that, you know, as a shareholder, we're ready to inject capital into a company to help it grow. Obviously, as you said, you know, at that point we would need to sit down with our partner and agree both on the opportunity and on how to fund it. And in the past, when we discussed in principle with our partner whether they were ready to do this, they were always very supportive and available to have those type of discussions. And if it hasn't happened, it's because we were not, frankly, able in the last few years to find the right size of opportunity at the right price, and we choose instead to do greenfields and smaller acquisitions. So that is what has been the case for the last few years, and it's still the case today.
Okay, thank you.
Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and one on your telephone. For any further questions, please press star and one on your telephone. The next question is a follow-up from Martino D'Ambrogi with Equita. Please go ahead.
Yeah, sorry to bother you. On Medipass residual activity, is there any update for the divestiture process?
We were now waiting for the situation in India to stabilize before we go back to the market. During the process, when we sold the European operations, we had some interested parties in India as well. But the disruption of COVID in India at that point in time was too big for them to follow up. So now we are not in a hurry. The company in India is small, but is improving its performance. So we'll probably go back to the market as soon as the local conditions would be stabilized in terms of activity in the healthcare sector, and so the potential buyers would be ready to focus on the opportunity. We hope it's going to be soon in any case.
Okay, and if I may just on, sorry if I missed it, is there an amount of costs considered not recurring related to COVID pandemic affecting 2020 results? Because I remember in the past presentations you presented a figure. I don't know if I missed it. Sorry. And what should we expect for the current year in terms of what can be considered non-recurring costs?
Well, there are many components to this topic. I mean, there are some cash costs related to protection mechanism, for example, protection devices that we didn't have before COVID that we're now having to bear. This is one component, and this probably amounts to mid-single-digit numbers, hopefully decreasing as soon as the pandemics will be over. Then, of course, there is the big topic of personal costs, which in a way can be considered all an extraordinary non-recurring cost, because what happened is that with a very big drop in occupancy, we were not able to decrease the personal costs accordingly, not only because of the fixed cost effect, but also because during the pandemic, every guest has got need more attention by our staff, because we have to separate guests in separate rooms to grant isolation, because we have to take care of them instead of their relatives, which used to maybe visit them quite often before. So, I mean, the amount of care per patient during the pandemic has increased quite substantially. So, I mean, the fact that the cost remained more or less fixed, the personal costs are fixed, can be considered more recurring and can be reabsorbed when occupancy raises, or if the pandemic is over before the occupancy is back to full occupancy. In any case, we'll be able at that point to trim the personal cost according to the level of activity in the nursing homes. Yes, I mean, all the personal costs are more or less, all the extra personal costs that we see today in percentage can be considered in a way non-recurring.
Okay, thank you.
Gentlemen, there are no more questions registered at this time. Gentlemen, would you like to add any final comments to conclude the conference?
No, I would just like to thank everybody for participating in this conference call. Good afternoon.